Nearly got a try on that left-hand side. What happened?
Oh, but I've gone up and over and bloody head over biscuit. It wasn't enough stability there for myself, but no, I was busting for a bit of meat this game. It didn't seem to work out.
Hello, cheers, and welcome to the Scrum of the Earth podcast, the weekly show for news, reviews, great interviews, and so much more, all about the world of rugby. My name is David Lawrence. I'm an American rugby fan who follows the game wherever I can find it, all over the globe. If you'd like to get in touch, well, I'm easy to find on all your socials, and you can always just drop an email to thescrumoftheearth@gmail.com. Well, you know, I think we ended up with a slightly calmer, more succinct offering this week, but of course, there's still a lot to get to, so why don't we just get this show on the road? Starting, as always, with our current updates, guess what? My son turned 8 this weekend, so as a special treat, we decided to let him stay home from school on Friday. We took him into Boston to the Museum of Science, a place he absolutely loves. It was a great couple of days of celebration. You know, Friday was for us with his grandparents coming over for presents and birthday dinner on Friday evening, and then on Saturday, it was his actual party. So a buddy of his recently rented a video game truck for his birthday, and my son has been dead set on doing the same ever since, so that's what we did. It's a bit painful on the price point, but it was a great experience. So he and 11 or 12 friends got to play every imaginable console and every imaginable game. And, you know, we, of course, had other like yard games, cake, the whole bit. I know this must be boring for you all, but it was a very, very fun time and a big milestone for us and him, of course. He is a great kid, and I must be the luckiest guy on the planet. Just saying.
It's stupid. People have to know.
Well, Isa, for me, it's bittersweet news this week, as a player I have spoken of many, many times in this space looks to be hanging up his boots. So, quoting here, quote, England centurion Danny Kerr will play for the Barbarians in what could be his final game at Twickenham Stadium, the home of English rugby. Barbarian FC have announced that Kerr will make his debut for the famous Invitational side at the ripe age of 37 when the men in black and white hoops tackle Fiji. Having featured in the Red Rose jersey at Twickenham over the years, he will now play in the star-studded Barbarians lineup to be led by Kiwi coach Robbie Deans against the Flying Fijians. He will join fellow England stars Ben Youngs, Zach Mercer, and Jonathan Joseph in the side and is relishing the prospect. Quote, I'm absolutely over the moon to be chosen to represent the Barbarians this summer, he said. You don't get too many firsts at this stage of your career, but this has been a long time coming. It's nearly happened a few times over the last few years, but now the stars have aligned, and I cannot wait to finally wear that famous black and white shirt. To do it at Twickenham as well is going to be so, so special for me. It's hard to pinpoint what I'm most excited about, as I'm really looking forward to experiencing the whole week. I've heard so many amazing stories from really good friends of mine who've done it before. The chance to meet, bond, train, and then play alongside a group of players who I have admired and played against before in my career is going to be a unique experience. I'll also get the opportunity to run out alongside some old friends as well, which will be really cool. Unquote. So, having started his career at Leeds Tykes, Kerr took his talents to Harlequins at age 19 and has since racked up a staggering 369 appearances for the Twickenham-based club, breaking Harlequins' all-time appearance record in February 2023. The number 9 has also won 2 premiership titles in the famous quarters jumper, 2011 and 12, and 2020 and 21, as well as a European Challenge Cup, 2010 to 2011, and an Anglo-Welsh Cup that was 2012 to 2013. A silver Commonwealth Games medalist with the England Sevens, Kerr debuted for the senior men's side in 2008 against New Zealand, and became only the 6th player to reach a century of test caps for the side earlier this month. Quote, you never know when it'll be your final time running out at Twickenham, so it's really nice to know I am definitely headed back there again so soon after I announced my international retirement. The stadium holds so many amazing memories for me, not least the one a few weeks ago when I got to run out for England for my 100th time with my kids by my side, so it'll be a special day and my family is excited to see it. Unquote. Danny Kerr. I fear my final he's so old joke has, you know, like Danny, your mighty arc sailed for the last time, but green pastures and seriously, all my best. You are an icon of a player and will be missed. Moving on to our thoughts of the week. This week, I'm thinking about Michael Cooper, who apparently will be making his debut at the Sevens in Hong Kong. So quoting here, quote, Australian star Michael Hooper has been incredibly honest over where he currently stands ahead of his World Rugby Sevens debut in Hong Kong. The Wallaby Centurion, who represented his country at the 2015 and 2019 Rugby World Cups in 15s, has switched to the shorter form of the game ahead of the Paris Olympics. An Achilles injury has delayed the 32-year-old's first appearance in sevens, but he's recovered from that issue to take his place in the squad ahead of next week's tournament. Quote, I'm not the fastest, not the fittest, so that doesn't start well, but I'll give it an absolute shift, Hooper told reporters. I'm going to find out. I'm going to learn as much as anyone can when I actually hit the field and see what I can do on the park, unquote. Hooper has a limited time to make an impression with just three tournaments remaining before the Olympic Games starts. There'll be no guarantee that he will be in the final Australia squad. Quote, I know that if I make that journey when the squad's picked, he said when discussing his Olympic dream, I've got this tournament and then another 4 weeks of training and then Singapore and same again amount of training and then Madrid. We, as a squad, will go to potentially another hit out against a couple of other nations before the squad actually gets picked. Hooper readily admits that it could take time. You know, to think that I'm a finished product after Hong Kong, I think I'd probably be applying too much pressure to myself unfairly, he said. It's very rewarding, actually. I've got a few people to thank because this has been a hard road for me. I've had some setbacks before my contract even started, Hooper added. It's quite a shift to what I expected in terms of the physicality needed to play this game. And I'm not there yet. This is going to be a big step forward, entering the field and playing. I've been a genuine student, trying to be a student in what people would imagine I've done for a while, but it's not the case. It's a different world. The team have really been open to giving me a lot of feedback, unquote. Well, you know me by now, and I love the guy and wish him all the best. You know I'll be keeping an eye peeled for him in Hong Kong. Okay, that brings us to our reviews, and we're starting this week again with the big one. The Women's Six Nations got top billing for us here at the Scrum of the Earth, where we had Scotland hosting France at the Hive, followed by England taking on Wales at Ashton Gate. Those were on Saturday, and then on Sunday, it was Ireland versus Italy at the RDS. In Edinburgh, I mean, I heard a lot of people saying, Scotland, we're going to take this one. I remember some of France's recent successes and didn't get my hopes up. In 2022, France beat Scotland at Scotstoun 28-8, and last year, pains me to recall, France shut them out in France with a double nickel. Yikes. I didn't think that's what it would look like this year. And right out of the gates, though, Scotland's defense, they looked really good. Though, to be fair, if they hadn't, they would have been in big trouble very quickly. So this one, it felt like a war of attrition. To be honest, kind of felt like France should have been way ahead. But for a long way, it was Scotland in charge on the scoreboard. They got a huge turnover with under 10 minutes to play. The comms shouting, who else but Evie Gallagher over the ball? And we were set for an exciting ending in this one. Scotland, for me, they looked a little bit gassed as the clock ticked down. And very late, the gates opened again for France to try to put it completely to bed. Final score at the Hive, 5-15. But I have a little fun side note here. My son watched this game with me while we were building his new Lego set from his birthday. So, you know, it's basically all my favorite things at once. He assumed Scotland were playing England. So he was like, boo, we hate England. And I was like, oh, no. It's France. It's not England. And he was like, oh, well, do we hate France too? My partner and I looked at each other and simultaneously went, meh. Back over in England, I was hoping for some good signs early from the Wales team. I wasn't looking for a win, but a good fast start would make things look good by the end. Sorry, just trying to be realistic. The Red Roses Grand Slam is already being called a foregone conclusion all over the place, at least where I listen. By the way, when I was poking around for stats, I found a whopper in the entire history of the Women's Six Nations in all its forms. There have been four wins where the margin was 80 points or better. All four of those belonged to England. They also scored 83 in Swansea in 1999, but they did allow 11 points from the home team in that one. So you hear talk about the tales of two halves. This was like the opposite. It was like a mirror of one half. England led 24-3 at halftime and closed it out in a rout, racking up 642 meters in a 46-10 win. Ellie Kildon had another brace, and Abby Dow just wouldn't behave, getting another try for her quiver. And Dallin and Will, I know you'll get that one. Kira Bevan was the try scorer for Wales in the losing effort, and the Red Roses are a wrecking ball. On Sunday, we were off to Dublin for Ireland versus Italy, and according to my little poll, you all thought that Italy would win this one. I mean, I honestly had no idea what to expect. Like, how much better are Ireland this year? How much better can you get in a year? Italy did come out fast and strong. They held a lead for a long stretch, but a try to Ireland and a disallowed try for the visitors seemed to shift the momentum. It was still within reach for the Irish 14-22 with a quarter hour to go. Ireland just could not get quick ball, though. Their attack was floundering from being snuffed out before it could start time after time. Meanwhile, Italy, they looked calm. They looked collected. Their set piece was a weapon all day, setting up another try as the sun set on the home team's hopes. Italy bounced back nicely after a first round hiding. Final score after a last ditch try to get a losing bonus point for Ireland and a thrilling ending that almost gave us some sort of all-time comeback result. 21-27 at the RDS, a fantastic performance by Italy, it must be said. On the other side of the globe, sticking with the women's game, Super Rugby Aupiki was on round 5 of 6. It's obviously a short but sweet competition. I was worried the reigning champs would end up going winless. Can you imagine? So late Thursday night, where I am, featured the aforementioned Matatu still hunting a W at home against the Hurricanes Pua. And at long last, it came. Matatu got into the win column finally with a 37-17 victory at the Apollo Projects Stadium in Christchurch. Then the Chiefs women, they were hosts for the Blues women, and the Blues really let them have it. Chiefs did manage 26, but the Blues dropped 40 on them, and if my math is right, that made a rematch of this very fixture a guarantee for our grand final in 2 weeks' time. Should be great. Over in Super Rugby Pacific, the once mighty Crusaders were hosting the currently mighty Chiefs. Josh Jacob was getting his first ever start in Super Rugby. Not a bad little player. This game tied in the voting for Game of the Week, which says a lot about historic reputation, I suppose. By the way, I'm starting to think all the Crusaders' problems this year aren't actually about player turnover and the exit of Scott Robertson. I think the issue might be the weird, kind of ugly new uniforms. That kit has got 0-6 written all over it. So naturally, as I've often said here, all predictions wrong or double your money back. It turned out Damian McKenzie wasn't the only thing the Chiefs had left at home. They apparently left their ability to play defense as well. Crusaders looked rejuvenated, though Sevu Reese looked a little, let's say, frustrated. And the home side won fairly convincingly, 37-26. In case you missed it, I just spoke with Harry Jones this past week, and he had some nice insight into the Crusaders organization and lots of other insights as well. I highly recommend checking that episode out. So, also in the wee small hours of the morning on Friday, Waratahs were facing the Sad Sack Rebels. I have to say, Stan Sport, you know, side note here, they do a really good job with the production values. Like almost every league I follow, where I am at least, the broadcasts and replays tend to start like 90 seconds, maybe 10 seconds before kickoff, and they end immediately after full time. There's no lead up, there's no analysis, there's no interviews after the fact. But when I watch Super Rugby, almost every single game replay clocks in around 3 hours because of all the production they have in the buildup and the aftermath. I mean, I guess it's just one more reason I enjoy this competition so much. Somehow, the Rebels, they forged an 8-point advantage with just over 6 minutes to go. It looked like it might be another crushing evening for the Tahs, who lost by 2 in round 3, 2 again in round 4, and then lost by 3 in round 5. So you could imagine them getting within 1 and then just running out of time. Quite literally, as I finished jotting that down, that's what happened. 1 point was the difference. However, a bad turnover put the visitors in prime position to fully slam that door, and that they would do, getting a try right at the death, finally done by the up-and-down Ghost team, 21-27 all told. And, I mean, who knows what's going on with either of these teams right now. So, the Fijian Drua, they were back at home again at Churchill Park to take on the Western Force. I honestly don't think it was possible for it to be raining anywhere else at the time, because surely this was as much rain as the planet can actually offer at one time. Holy cow! The conditions were completely absurd, but, you know, it made for incredible spectacle sitting safe and dry at home. It certainly didn't put much of a damper on the crowds on hand either. So the Drua, they led 18-10 at halftime and finished with a palindromic scoreline, a big wet 31-13 in Lautoka. Moana Pacifica took on the Blues at Eden Park, their home away from home. And while the scoreline looked big by the end, it was actually a bit of a lackluster performance by the Blues. Final score, 8-47. My Highlanders were hosting the Hurricanes. There were some big talking points at the top, including the return of Ethan de Groot, the 100th Super Rugby cap for Tyrell Lomax, who's only 27, by the way. And when TJ came in off the bench, it made him the most capped Hurricane in franchise history. Remarkable career for Perenara. So that was when all the happy talk ended, however. And I'm not going to lie, the comms, are now so down on my Highlanders that they're actually making me feel bad for even supporting them. They're like perpetually disappointed parents. It's like, it's tough to have to listen to it while watching my team get their butts whooped at the same time. And that's exactly what happened again. My guys scoreless and behind by 26 at the break. And by the end, it was their 19th consecutive loss to New Zealand teams, one shy of a record set by the Blues 6 years ago. Final score, 12-47. Canes looking really good right now. Finally, it was the other choice for our game of the week, and the one I had circled on my own calendar. It was the Reds at home for the Brumbies. Would Corey Toole add yet another try to his growing total? The comms started with spectators salivating at Suncorp Stadium this Easter Saturday, and it's not in anticipation of the Easter Bunny delivering chocolate eggs. It's because of this mouthwatering matchup in Super Rugby Pacific. And I don't know. I just felt like I had no idea how this one was going to unfold. So the Reds, they had won 7 of the last 8 games at Suncorp against the Brumbies, but it just felt like a clean slate for this intriguing season we've got on our hands. It took the home team just a minute and a half to nab the first try of the night. I loved the speed of this game. Both teams were clearly fired up. Reds didn't fire another shot before the break, by which time the Brumbies led 7-10, but it was clearly anyone's game. It got so good. It was 19-17 with 13 minutes left. Lolasio soon got the lead back. And by the way, he's looking really good off the tee this year. Whatever, you know, sort of spell of uncertainty he had gone through, he seems to be all the way back. You have to wonder if he might end up figuring for the Wallabies again at some point. Anyway, an incredible finish in this one. Brumbies winning away 19-20 in an instant classic. So after our 6th round, it's Hurricanes on top at 6-0, the Blues and the Brumbies at 5-1. The Chiefs are 4-2. The Reds dropped to 3-3, tying them with the Melbourne Rebels. Not a good sign. The Fijian Drua are at 500, which leaves my sagging Highlanders, the final team sneaking in if the playoffs started today. Moana Pacifica, the Snakebit Waratahs, the Crusaders, and the Western Force are currently on the outside looking in, with 40% of the season officially in the books. Okay, back up in the top 14, and I figured it was worth pointing out which teams are currently where on the table. It's a long season for sure. So, for instance, the weekend started off with number 13, currently Montpellier, hosting number 1 Stade Francais, and, you know, you'd expect a blowout, but Stade had to eke this one out by the skin of their teeth, 10-12. Then it was number 4 Racing versus number 10 Clermont. The home team ran away with this one, 26-10. Number 6, La Rochelle, were hosting bottom-feeding Oyonnax, and they'd win it handily, 40-21. Number 11, Perpignan versus number 7, Cast, was another middle game on Saturday. Perpignan smashed Cast completely, just running up a 43-12 victory to sort of shake up the table a little bit, maybe. Number 12, Lyon, were hosting my number 3, Bordeaux-Bègles. It was the final entry for the in-between slots on Saturday. I can't say what happened to my Border Beagles. They basically forgot to show up, losing really badly, 27-10. Saturday night, though, it was number 2 Toulouse versus number 8 Po. This was our game of the week, though. That was, you know, just a pick by me. I totally spaced on putting out the poll. Sorry. Anyway, Po, if you remember, they had actually occupied the league's top spot for a brief while, but things felt sort of back to normal now, with Toulouse an absolute powerhouse at home, where they were undefeated this year, having garnered 42 of a possible 45 points at the Stade Ernest Wallon. The big news, though, Entomac was back. He was heavily strapped up and ended up coming in as a replacement, ironically coming in for Dupont, who they had starting at 10 for reasons undisclosed. Poe, they kept this thing close, down only 4 points at the intermission. And Theo Etesogbe, he got his 2nd breakaway try of the night right in the opening moments of the 2nd half. Were we about to see a serious upset in the top 14? Toulouse were concerned enough that Dupont actually came back on with just over 10 minutes left, and he did not look particularly pleased about it. So just as you'd imagine, that, of course, made the difference as he drove his team towards an inevitable winning try. I mean, was there any doubt? An incredible ending and a great showing by both teams, but as Dennis Green in the NFL famously said, they were who we thought they were. Final score, 31-29. And then finally on Sunday, number 9, Bayonne faced number 5, Toulon. This was a take-him-out-behind-the-woodshed kind of game for Toulon, smashing their host 10-46 to close out the weekend in France. All right, the Premiership started with lowly and desperate Newcastle at home for the Leicester Tigers. It was yet another bad day for the Falcons, losing again, this time 13-19. Man, oh man. Northampton versus Saracens was the clear and away game of the week. I was actually pretty excited for this one. Like, which Saints team would show up after a poop performance last week? As things kicked off, the comms said it was a, quote, sunshine in very heavy showers kind of day, unquote, which, I don't know, sounded like the most English thing I've ever heard. A quick shout out, by the way, to Billy Vunipola, who made the funniest slash best kick to the corner I've seen in the Prem all year. So, Saints, they led 17-10 at the half, but Saracens were hot on their heels. Billy Vunipola was having a heck of a game, by the way, but when Saracens got a yellow for an intentional knock-on, Northampton immediately ran a beautiful play to get in and pad their lead. Saracens, quite literally right at the end, scored to get a bonus point try, but it was 41-30, and Northampton were on top as they vanquished the Pretenders. Though, I mean, you just know, either of these teams can come out on top. So, Gloucester versus Bristol was next. We were back to business as usual, the Cherry and Whites losing at home to the enigmatic Bears, 24-33. Gloucester actually had 24 at the halftime and then just turned off, much as their fans must be feeling right now. So after that, we were on to the will-they-or-won't-they Harlequins, who were back at home to take on mostly red-hot Bath. Andre Esterhuizen decided to remind everyone just how good he is, scoring two tries and dropping would-be defenders left and right, to the point where, I mean, as far as I could tell, Finn Russell's name didn't even get mentioned. It was 33-3 at the break, and Bath just had no answers at all. But Harlequins didn't really, like, put things away. After getting to 40 early in the second half, Quins just kind of dried up and just watched Bath come all the way back to 40-36. That with 3 minutes and one remaining restart, the comms actively asking if this would be the largest comeback ever. For me, it was Marcus Smith's little tiny kick over and through that put Bath out of reasonable attacking distance. And then it was a goofy result for the Harlequins, who had been 37 points clear, but still wins a win 40-36 at the Stoop. To conclude round 14, we had a blowout, Sale obliterating Exeter 41-5. So if you recall, only four teams in the Prem make the knockout stages. And if the season had ended after this weekend, those teams would have been the Northampton Saints, Bath, Saracens, and my weirdo Harlequins. Bristol and Exeter are tied and right behind Quins, and a miracle still could bring Leicester or Sale to the dance, while Gloucester and Newcastle, I mean, let's just say there's always next season. Falcons still have yet to win a single game. Holy cow. Finally, the URC rolled on. This weekend brought us two Friday fixtures, starting with Leinster versus Bulls. And if I'm not mistaken, the Bulls had never lost in Dublin, so this one looked like a potential preview of the pundits' predictions for a final. And yes, I absolutely went to town on the alliteration there. This one, it was a really good game. It felt like a scene from The Last Dance. It was like the Pistons versus, I mean, well, the Bulls. It was 12-14 at the half. Kind of felt like a slugfest. But the second half, man, it belonged to Leinster. However, I don't know. Was this a harbinger of the end game for this season? The hoodoo was smashed. The Bulls will have to take a hard look at themselves. The home team pouring it on 47-14. And as the comms said, they had well and truly put Bulls to the sword. Dragons versus Zebre was next. Two teams at the bottom of the table, and Dragons were pleased to be up 13-6 at halftime. I had to pinch myself because they expanded their lead and then looked keen to, you know, play well for an entire game. But of course, it came right down to it. Zebre getting within a converted try with 4.5 minutes to go, but for them, it was not to be. Dragons getting that lovely, rare win at home, or anywhere for that matter, 20-13. Zebre might need a timeout. So on Saturday, it was Benetton versus Connacht. Bit of a dreary day in Treviso, and dreary was how I would describe both teams' play throughout the first half. Benetton, they took a 10-7 lead into the break, but with under 10 to go, Jack Carty got Connacht their first lead of the day. It looked like that was going to seal it, but with the clock in its death throes, Issachar smashed his way down the right wing and scored to give his side a heartbreaking for my guys comeback win, 18-14 at the end. Connacht disconsolate, as described by the comms. Yeah, and me. Sharks, they were hosting Edinburgh, who were looking to get a split out of their South African tour, and picked an appropriate squad in aid of that cause. The comms described the day as not entirely as hot as it might have been, so I guess they had that going for them. Sharks, they took a 7-3 lead into the lockers. Edinburgh never really got into gear in the second half. A late yellow saw the Sharks expand their lead and eventually get their second consecutive win. Pretty sure for the first time this entire year, a solid win in Durban, 23-13. In all seriousness, Ben Healy must feel like Job from Arrested Development right now.
Job was having second thoughts about the relationship.
I've made a huge mistake.
Ospreys were home for the Lions. Ospreys really surprised me. I mean, or maybe the Lions did. It was a big home win at the Swansea.com, 36-21. What a match. Stormers, they were hosting Ulster next. It was just one of those random blow rugby moments. No comms of any kind. But as I've said before, it's just a different experience when all you've got is crowd noise and an isolated ref mic. So as long as it's not a match that's like super important to you, it's actually kind of cool sometimes. So I was here for it in this case. So Ulster, they scored first. They got a great shot of an elderly gent who had made the trip wearing all his Ulster gear, also while looking like he was cosplaying at a Caddyshack convention. It took them forever, but Stormers, they eventually gained the upper hand and went on to pull out a weird win from their collective butt, 13-7 in Cape Town. I feel like I'm saying butt a lot this week. Scarlets, they were back at home for the Glasgow Warriors, and somehow this got voted your game of the week. And by the way, I'm on to you, listeners. A Scarlets game getting voted in over like the Sharks game or the Munster versus Cardiff game. Oh, and in the Women's Six Nations, more than 23% of you said Wales were beating England. I mean, I get it. And you know what? Bring it on. I'm here for it. Anyway, the comms pointed out that there were a lot more butts in the seats. I said it again. A lot more butts in the seats after last week's win. And I mean, I was surprised that the fans were so fickle at the Parky Scarlets. Oh, side note here, bit of trivia. Did you know that Park East Scarlets translates to Park of Scarlets? Fascinating. You know, it's obviously our aim here to drop a bit of esoteric knowledge and science each and every week, clearly. An early yellow to Scarlets. It looked foreboding. Glasgow weren't in much of a mood to take it by the scruff of the neck, though, and kind of just mulled their way to a 3-14 edge at the intermission. Glasgow really poured it on in the second half, though, and turned it into a blowout, 3-45 when all was said and done. And it meant good news for Glasgow's position on the table, that's for sure. And then finally, Munster were back in the warm confines of Thomond Park to face Cardiff. And, you know, points were a commodity hard to come by. Munster up 3-0 after the first 40 minutes. Cam Winnett, he looked great, I thought, but it wasn't translating into scoring for the visitors. Ben Thomas finally got Cardiff on the board with an intercept try. His team would briefly hold that lead, but Munster, it proved too much, unsurprisingly. 20-15 was the final tally in Limerick. So after all of this, we had three Irish clubs in the top eight, Leinster at 12-2 topping the table, Munster at number four and seeming to be gaining momentum right now, Ulster just sneaking in at number eight, Glasgow and the Bulls are 2-3, respectively, followed by Stormers, Benetton, and Ospreys. And if you tell me that you had this particular order in your predictions before the season started, well, you know what? I submit that you are a bit of a fibber. And then back home in the MLR, my beloved Free Jacks were on a bye week this week, which coordinated very nicely with my son's birthday party. So thanks for that. Really appreciate it. Anyway, around the rest of the league, there were only four fixtures this weekend, actually, including a Texan derby. Dallas, they were at home at the Choctaw for the Thundercats. Houston, they continued their winning ways. Remember earlier this year when the Jackals were on top of the West? Yeah, they dropped another one, though it was a close one. It was 27-30 by the end. And yes, I am officially worried by the Thundercats. So after that, the Second City Pupsters hosted the Seawolves. Wasn't too surprised to see the Seawolves taking it on the road. It was 26-34. The stupidly named Anthem continued their quest for a first ever win, this time against DC. It would remain unfulfilled, however, though they did score a bunch of points, to be fair. It was 32-46. And then the Sharks were back in Fort Lauderdale to take on San Diego. And Harry Jones was right. Every team in the MLR should be scared of every other team. The parity is at an all-time high. So to close out the weekend, it was almost a second win for the Sharks, but they would just drop it 21-22. Wow. Also, to finish off the weekend, I don't know where this game was broadcast, if it was, but my USA Women's Eagles defeated South Africa this weekend 38-17 at Trailfinders Sports Ground. Very pleased to see this result. It's, again, massively disheartening, though, that I didn't know where and if it was even possible to watch. And then today, two full days later, there's literally nothing on the official USA Eagles website. It shows you the score, but if you click point summary, it says under tries, not player events. Same for conversions, and that's it. The match stats show all zeros. The commentary is blank. Even the icon for the USA Eagles is too low a resolution and is all blurry right there next to the sharp, crisp Springbok logo. Folks, our World Cups are not that far away, but they are a long way away. You know what I mean? Well, by the music, you'll know it's time for this week's Diamond in the Ruck Award. And this week, the award goes to Vittoria Vicini. Ms. Vicini, you dominated the front row and set the tone for a great win for Italy away in Dublin. You scored two tries and showed no signs of being subbed out well past 77 minutes. And from where I sat, you were easily the difference for your team this weekend. Vittoria Vicini, congratulations to you, for you are this week's Diamond in the Ruck. Well done. Okay, moving on to our updates and previews, it looks like a far more reasonable slate than the last couple of weeks have been, at least. So the women's Six Nations, they're on hold for a week, and meanwhile, the men's Premiership is also taking a timeout, as is the URC, as is the Top 14. And why? Why? Because it's the return of the European Cups in the Heineken Cup. Yes, I still insist on calling it that. We've got Harlequins hosting the Glasgow Warriors, Bulls at Loftus for Lyon, the Stormers hosting La Rochelle, the stupid Exeter Chiefs are hosting Bath, my Border Beagles are home for Saracens. Wow, that could be good. Leinster, they host Leicester in a battle of teams who would both read LEI on the scoreboard. Northampton, they host Munster, another potential cracker. And Toulouse, they welcome Racing, another great matchup on paper. In the Colt 45 Malt Liquor Cup, we'll have Gloucester versus Cast, Claremont versus Cheetahs. Go, Cheetahs. Benetton, they'll take on Lions in Treviso. Ospreys, they get a home game at Dunraven Brewery Field to face Sale. Edinburgh, they're back at the Hive for Bayonne. Montpellier hosts Ulster. Sharks get to stay in Durban for Zebre. And finally, Pau play host to my weird Connacht team. So down in Super Rugby Aupiki, we've got our final round. The Hurricanes Pua will be at home for the Blues women, and Matatu will be looking for their second win this year against the Chiefs women. In Super Rugby Pacific, we'll have the Blues hosting the Force, Rebels at home for the Drua, Chiefs versus Moana Pacifica, and Brumbies versus Warrantahs, which means bye weeks for four teams. Interesting. And then finally, back here at home in the MLR, my beloved Free Jacks host the Miami Sharks. Yacht Rock is the theme for the festival this time, so there will definitely be pictures. Keep an eye out for that. Elsewhere, it's Utah versus stupidly named Anthem, Seattle versus Dallas. Ooh, that looks spicy. NOLA versus the Pups, and DC are home in Germantown to face the Bell Ends. Could be a great weekend. Well, my friends, that does it for another week, and I'm actually looking forward to the shift in focus back to Europe next week. You know, the break between the pool stages and the knockouts always, the last few years, have felt so, so long to me, but somehow, this year, the rounds of 16 really snuck up on me, which is like a weirdly good feeling to have. So anyway, as usual, to all of you across the globe, cheers, talk to you soon, and be well.
It gives me great pleasure to be here today.
Oh, it does, neat.